Behavioral Health Integrations podcast strives to inspire the next generation of mental health and addiction specialists. Our aim is to continue to raise awareness and encourage collaboration in the mental health and addiction industry so that it will continue to thrive. There are numerous approaches to treating mental health and substance abuse issues. On this show, we take pleasure in showcasing the diversity of these approaches used to improve the lives of others. So without further ado, your host, Jacob Minnig.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another Behavioral Health Integration episode. Today, I have two very special guests. First being returning special guest, Michael Thornhill. And next, we have first-time special guest, Randall Hansen. In this episode, we will be talking many things psychedelic as to psychedelic-assisted therapy, as well as Randall Hansen's new book, Triumph Over Trauma. Psychedelic medicines are helping people heal their trauma, change their lives, and grow their spirituality. Again, I am very excited to have these two gentlemen on my show today. So without further ado, let's get started. Well, again, thank you, Michael and Randall, for being on my show. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Happy to be here.
Yeah, thank you.
Again, we're going to have a lot of fun on this show. It's always fun, you know, when we get to talk about like psychedelics and new recovery modalities, and I'm thrilled to begin. So, Randall, you being a first-time guest, I would love to take this opportunity for you to tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got into the mental health field, and how you kind of branched into the psychedelic realm, if you don't mind.
Sure. Well, I got into, I've been an educator my entire life, and I probably got into wellness about 20 years ago. I just happened to read this book on the basically the evils of sugar, which led me down this rabbit hole of, wow, there's a lot of evil stuff we consume in our lives. And I was perfectly happy in that venue. I had heard of psychedelics as a kid, but had never really explored them in any way. My dad was an organic chemist, but I think he thought he was a narc at times. You know, he'd walk around the neighborhood, I smell marijuana. And so it kind of kept us sort of following that anti-drug mentality that the government was pushing anyway. But about 3 years ago, my wife Jenny was listening to a podcast with Jesse Gould, who is the founder of Heroic Hearts Project. Mm-hmm. And he was talking about his own healing journey of going down to the jungle and consuming ayahuasca after trying all these other modalities and finally finding healing. And we both looked at each other and said, what the heck is ayahuasca? Mm-hmm. And why are we sending veterans to South America? What, you know, what's going on? And that led to this whole down the rabbit hole of President Nixon and the politics behind Schedule One and scheduling these drugs. And, but then also the happy part of finding out about MAPS and what their dedication to try to bring this modality of healing through official channels and hopefully FDA approval, maybe as early as next year. So, so first it was really looking at veterans because Jenny and I both have a special place in our heart for veterans. Her dad was a veteran and she grew up in San Diego with a big veteran community. And so, but then we realized, well, this healing is, you know, goes well beyond just PTSD from war combat or things like that. And then that led to reading people like Dr. Gabor Maté and wow, his views on trauma and that, you know, we all have experienced trauma, whether it's a big T as he talks about it or a small T, and that trauma, especially if it's a hidden trauma, has leads to things like whether it's anger or fear or worse, sometimes depression, addiction. And so that led to just this sort of further exploration and then some of my own psychedelic healing and journeys. And it was actually during one of these journeys, I had been, you know, I'd read that, you know, people were talking about getting a digital download when they do a psychedelic journey. And I was like, come on. But, you know, I had people say, oh, yeah, I got the description of my website, or I found out that the one thing I was missing on my app, and I thought, no, that doesn't happen. But on one journey, I got this download for this book that said, the medicine said, this is what you need to do. You need to get these stories out there. And the book is based on stories because I think that's the way most of us learn, throughout history. It's through storytelling. And so this book is a collection of 23 stories of transformation, of healing, and just so powerful. And then I've written a couple chapters before and after that kind of grounds all those stories in the history and protocols, things like that. So probably a lot more than you wanted, but
No, more the
pretty cool.
merrier. Michael, do you have anything to add?
No, I just think it sounds like a beautiful, well, opening and awakening to share that direct experience of others in such a lovely format. So I'm very excited for this to be shared with the world. So
Thank
really
you.
wish you all the best with that, Randall. Sounds like a beautiful project.
Well, thank you, Michael, very much. It in fact basically helped me with my integration, and I think actually the book for people that have done psychedelics, it's more meant for people that are just thinking about psychedelics. But it's funny, as these people were telling their stories, they were then integrating that journey again, and so it's just fascinating. The book sort of is a ongoing tool even, so for people that are have, that are in the field.
Randall, were you nervous the first time you tried? Was it ayahuasca the first one you tried?
No, the first one I did was psilocybin.
Okay.
I had done the research enough to know that psilocybin seemed one of the more friendly psychedelics. And in fact, some people would talk about it being kind of humorous. I've never quite experienced that aspect of it, but yeah. So I have to look at my notes, but I think I actually. I'm trying to remember if I microdosed first, which is sort of the trendy thing now, and then ma macrodosed. Or I think I actually macrodosed first, and then after that being such a good experience, I thought I'd try microdosing to see if that was also as good.
Yeah, and now macro dosing is obviously a higher dose, I'm assuming, and that's more of a thing where it's just like you gotta plan your whole day out, right? So like you shouldn't be working. You should have maybe a couple of 2, 3 hours where you're alone and safe.
The microdosing is taking a very minuscule amount of the medicine so that you really have almost imperceptible. You might feel a little extra energy, or some people talk about mental clarity, but there's no hallucinations, no feeling out of control or anything like that. And then in a macro dose, and those vary from a small macro, still large, but to what we call heroic dose. And a heroic dose are the ones that are the really gnarly experiences. But yes, for the macro dose, you definitely want to make sure you're in a safe setting, private setting, that you can be there for several hours. Each medicine type has a different length. Psilocybin is one of the shorter on the shorter side, 4 to 5 hours. LSD can go tw 12 to 15 hours. So yeah, you need to block out time for sure for a macro journey.
And Michael, I know your facility kind of specializes in that because, again, you have your coaches and you have your safe environment that you create for people when they go on journeys like this.
Yeah, so we specialize in ayahuasca ceremonies, and yeah, so the ceremony experience ourselves when people are in ceremony with us is generally from 3 to 5 hours for the ceremony, but the effects of the ayahuasca can last 5, 6, 7 hours or a little bit longer, but we're always available around until people are feeling grounded and ready to go to bed, and we also have walkie-talkies in everyone's room, so if for some reason the medicine decides that it wants to have a second round, then we're available. But yeah, I think what's interesting is that medicine works different with everyone. So what might be one person's experience, it can be completely different to someone else's. And I think that's what, not only for the duration, but the actual process or the journey or the experience. And I think that's what makes plant medicine journeys so profound, is that they're tailor-made for your yeah. own consciousness, your own experience, whatever you are here to learn and heal and evolve. So yeah, every experience is unique to the individual.
And Michael, you raise a good point that especially for first journeys, either going through a clinical trial where they have protocol and safety measures, or going through a clinic like yours or a center like yours, where they can be monitored, observed, coached, and watched over is important because, you know, too many people, especially as this wave is crashing, I'm afraid are going to be trying to jump into psychedelics without the proper planning, without the proper coaching, and may lead to some backlash down the road if that happens. So I'm glad you talked about that. Thank you.
Yeah, no, thank you, Randall. And I think that's a, you know, a really important point is that there's so many benefits from these medicines. So there's a natural trend, what would everyone would want to say, well, let's get on that healing bus, let's get on right. that journey mm-hmm. and let's have some of that, and it becoming more and more available, which is fantastic. But at the same time, that requirement, it seems, for a trauma-informed approach, which is what we specialize in, and also the integration of those experiences so that people can make life transformation rather than just having an experience that some people can feel unintegrated or don't really understand or make sense of those types of experiences. And in some of those situations and settings, and you know, I can speak for myself from when I was actually younger and experimented with lots of drugs, and that was one of the actual reasons I came to plant medicine, was to heal from addiction. But being in LSD journeys, in experiences, in party environments, in uncontrolled spaces, with not really knowing what's going on in terms of entering into the multidimensional realms, a lot of those experiences were traumatizing for me because I didn't have the help and support available. That's not to say that would be the case for everyone, but it is important to recognize that when we start to delve into the depths of our unconscious, the very nature of the unconscious means there's things there that we don't know about. And when those things come up, whether it be blissful or difficult, it's important to have the right level of support around you. Whether that be a friend, if you feel like that is the level of support that you require, or from people who specialize in this type of work that can help safely guide you to the depths of your own inner being.
Yeah, you raised a point from a story of mine where the person was addicted to alcohol and cocaine, and he had an experience. It was I think it was a psilocybin experience, and it was so profound, and it told him, you don't need the alcohol, you don't need the cocaine, get off it, heal yourself. But when he got out, he did it by himself. And when he got out of the journey, all the people around him were still the same people that were the drug addicts and the alcoholics. And he felt more alone and more desperate because he had gotten this taste from the medicine, from the psychedelic of the healing, but he didn't have the people around him, that community around him to support him. So yes, that's another extremely important point is that, you know, after doing a psychedelic medicine, you change, but the world around you is the same. So you have to figure out your new place in that world.
Yes, that's something that can be quite difficult, I think, for people who go into these journeys. And, you know, from, you know, we work a lot of people from PTSD and trauma and addictions and many different things like this that create the environment in our reality that which is non-preferential in many senses, that we don't prefer the way that we're living. And that's why often people will come to us and to work with plant medicine. But often the insights, the transformation that occurs often, or at least sometimes, point towards the life that you're living is not in alignment with the truth of who you are. And then that point where we recognize when we get, and for everyone who's not taken plant medicines, there's often a deep awakening of an inner truth that is indescribable, that is beyond a thought, beyond a feeling. It's an inner knowing that is unwavering. And when we come into that truth, It's like something that we've never experienced before that's undeniable. And when we glimpse into that window, even if it just be through a one ceremony experience, it can often cast reasonable doubt on the things that we're doing in our life, that those might not actually be beneficial for us. And that process is an individual process for everyone, because sometimes people are able to have these experiences and make clear, concise choices with the right support to change and shift their life experience. But the other type of person potentially might be that their life has been existing for 25, 30 years and there's long existing structures that it might not be practical, safe, or feasible to just overnight then say, we're going to change all of these structures. And then that process can occur when we then have competing experiences, if one might use the word competing, but I'm sure there's a better word out there, or that says, well, I kind of have a glimpse of where I'm going, but I'm not there yet. And then that's when that struggle can begin to arise. And sometimes that's when people can have difficulty with an integration process, especially if they're not understanding that even though we have these glimpses and these experiences and these transitions and it sets us in a different trajectory, that might be an integration path of 3 to 5 years. Mm-hmm. So sometimes people can feel lost and alone and then think, well, my life's wrong. There's something wrong. So having the support of professionals around you to help guide you through that process rather than adding more confusion into an often difficult situation to begin with.
Yeah. Beautifully said.
Yeah. And so what I sense is that you're getting more into the mindset of don't consider it a one-time fix, even though it's, and I don't know if this might be a good or bad thing, but like I hear stories where people will go on one experience or one trip and they're cured from their addictions. I mean, I have heard some, not a lot of stories, but from their words, like, it has happened before. So then you get these other people who see that or hear about that, be like, oh, okay, well, hopefully that'll happen to me. And again, they put all their eggs in that basket or into that mindset of, hey, I'll get healed right away. And when it doesn't happen, that's when they might get frustrated or start being, I don't know, more freaked out.
Yeah, and some people have no experiences on psychedelics, either because of medication they're taking and they didn't taper down, or just their body chemistry. And so that can be extremely frustrating, because you want to have that, you heard about this psychedelic experience that's going to transform you, and then you have sort of nothing happen. You know, you sit there and you're like, oh, I felt a little, you know, something, I saw one color change or something like that. But where is this dramatic change? So, yeah, so I think expectations, you know, play a critical role here. You won't know, you know, as Michael said, every experience is different, for each person, each medicine I've taken, each time, even if it's the same dose and the same medicine, each journey is different for different reasons. So we just have to go into that with that notion of, here's what I hope, or here's what I think, you know, the journey is going to be like, and here's my intention for what I want to see, but the medicine's going to affect me the way the medicines affect me. And that's just kind of always the way it's been, and just be prepared for that.
Yeah. And I can speak from my own experience of, when I first came to ayahuasca to heal from addictions, that it was within my first retreat, as of a few ceremonies, within my first or second ceremony, that I had this experience where I could see that all the addictions that I was perpetuating were from the lack of unconditional love. And then this was profound, and I had a very substantial change. And I stopped smoking, stopped drinking, stopped doing drugs immediately. And then the next bit was, the whole life that you've built is supporting all of those addictions. So unless you really change that, it's going to be very difficult to maintain that level of sobriety, because the life that you have is actually creating the environment for addiction. Yeah. Because you're not happy. The life doesn't support you. It's based upon institutions, other people's beliefs, the idea of success in a capitalist society that's just trying to create more money. This is not what you're here to do. So at that point for me, I was very fortunate in the sense that I was able to take a decision where I was working for myself. I had my own business, and I was able to just take a drastic change and went to India. I went to India, which was starting for a month. And then once I was there, I knew that if I went back, my old life would consume me. Yep. So I took that step where I relinquished the business, relinquished the money, relinquished these different types of things and stayed traveling. And people had listened to me on the earlier podcast. Now I went to Nepal and then found myself to Peru. And then after doing a lot of internal work and continuing to heal from sexual abuse and trauma, which were really at the core of those addictions, I met my wife, and then we founded Casa Galactica, mm-hmm. where the work that I do now is in alignment. It's not fueling addictions. It's still able to mm-hmm. be here, but in a much more pure and integrous way. And that is completely different. The way that I feel is completely different. So I think it depends, in situations. It could have been in a situation where I had that experience, and at that time that I didn't have the financial freedom to be able to make that decision, and that I would have required to have stayed within that position, and that would have been a different path.
Yeah.
So there's no one path to everyone. But I think the important thing is when we are desiring healing is to begin, to take a step on that path. It doesn't matter what it looks like for you or for someone else, but take that step forward and trust. It's kind of like that Indiana Jones movie where he walks across the bridge, that each of those steps kind of present themselves in front of you. Just trust that whatever that looks like, that support will arise. And we're living in a time and an age where there's so many podcasts and things like this where you can reach this information for most, many, many places completely for free.
Yeah.
And then you can start to invest as well in that process of healing at the level that you feel comfortable for you.
I love everything you just said. I'm not surprised that we're in alignment there. One thing that I especially want to echo is that to me, the biggest benefit of psychedelics, especially compared to, say, an SSRI for depression, is that the psychedelic, the prescription drug just masks those symptoms. It's never going to get at the problem that's causing those symptoms. The psychedelics strip you down, especially something like ayahuasca, which has, you can't resist it. It's that powerful of a medicine, and it will show you the trauma. And sometimes, as Michael mentioned, there are multiple traumas that we've experienced, and if we're good at it, like my family's background is Scandinavian, and we joke about how everything is swept under the rug. So all this trauma is just pushed down, compartmentalized. And so we have these, some of these veteran stories of healing are amazing. They go in, they talk about, the worst things in their memories of buddies dying and body parts and things like that, and they say, thank God ayahuasca is gonna heal me. And then their first journey, ayahuasca shows them that they were sexually abused when they were a kid, and they didn't even realize it, and they have to heal that first before they can heal all the other trauma that's built up on top of it. So that's, to me, the promise of psychedelics. And that's also sometimes why we have to do multiple journeys, because sometimes people can get one journey and that they find that main trauma, and they can then spend the rest of their life integrating and finding a way to heal that and change their life away from that. But for others, you need to heal these different traumas that we've experienced through our lifetime.
Thanks for sharing that, Randa. Well said.
I'm wondering, like a year down the road, right, when hopefully, knock on wood, FDA proves, I think MAPS is finishing up MDMA, right?
Yep, as
what do you think, and again, I don't know who's in charge of this, but if it's like the health insurance companies or the government, what do you think is the main thing they need to get across to the general public when they're going to try to pursue this route of intervention?
Well, let me give you two examples, and I think we have a lot of re-education to do. There was an article, I can't remember who posted it on LinkedIn, and it was about psilocybin and depression, and how it looks like it's doing. This one study showed great results that people went at least 6 months, if not longer, without a depressive episode from one psilocybin mm-hmm. experience. So this MD jumps in and says, psychedelics are killers, and just look up the Manson family, and that's what psychedelics mm-hmm. does. And I looked at this guy, and he's an addiction specialist, an MD. And so I sent him I posted a couple links to like a MAPS or some, or a Johns Hopkins study, and said, just look at these and, you know, and maybe these will change your mind. And he just repeated again, no, psychedelics make people kill. And I thought, well, okay, that's,
it's like, he's a medical doctor, but he's right. speaking like a 5-year-old right now.
Right. Right. And that's, right. and so that, right. So that worries me. And then, you know, we have the other people that think, you know, they see the studies and they say, oh, you're just trading one addiction for another. You know, and no, that's not what these things do. I mean, especially something like ibogaine. Ibogaine is probably the gnarliest psychedelic. Mostly it's done in clinics where there are doctors and you have heart monitors on you. So, you know, you only want to do ibogaine once if you have to do it at all. But that seems to be the one that definitely clears all addictions from people. They do that, and they don't look back to alcohol, drugs, whatever. But that's set. So we do have a lot of educating to do on that part, that, you know, the, you know, Jacob, you're probably not old enough, but I remember the frying pan with the eggs and the, this is yep. your brain on drugs, you know. And so we have all this built up mm-hmm. fear, and fear is actually one of the things that could hurt a journey. If we go into a psychedelic experience afraid, it can affect our journey, because our, you know, it's in our brains, and we're now setting ourselves up for, you know, some negative experiences in that journey. So I'd say education is number one, and then both in terms of re-educating people over the lives, but then also educating, if we talked about the beginning of this process, which is, don't just, you know, do like they did in the 60s, you know, grab a pill and go to the club or you know, go to the concert. You want to be intentional in this process, and you want to sit there and meditate and think about that healing, and then go into that experience.
Yeah. Yeah. Another thought too, where I've mentioned this in previous episodes, but God, like when this gets approved, I just wish a lot of the treatment centers, especially in Minnesota, would adopt, or at least have an open mind to possibly think about adopting this type of intervention. But I'm sorry, I don't think they will, because they're so stuck in their own ways. Like you just mentioned, a drug can't heal another drug, or whatnot, or they're just so pro 12 steps, that's the only way to do it. And again, that's still the majority, or a good amount of the practitioners. And again, I don't know what it's like in Washington, but in Minnesota, that still adapt that 12-step NAAA mentality. And it's really hindering.
Yeah. And, you know, the irony is that Bill Wilson and yep. the 12-step did LSD to help him with his alcohol.
Even though some will still deny it. I mean,
yeah, I would love to see this, because, you know, I want to hear more about Michael Center, but mm-hmm. I love, you know, obviously in certain countries it's legal, and that's the best way it should be, because then you can investigate and do your research, your due diligence on the center. I will say I did my ayahuasca in an underground center. And I did as much due diligence as I could, but there's very little, because there's not a website that says, hey, come here for ayahuasca, because you'll be arrested and so will we. And he said all the right words. It looked like he was a good healer, a good facilitator. And it turned out to be kind of the medicine was amazing, but the experience itself was pretty horrific. And you know, if you could say every bad practice was broken, that would probably be accurate. And so that's the other issue is, you know, when all this medicine right now is underground, you know, except for in little pockets, Oregon, Colorado, and some cities, people are buying stuff or trying to buy things that are maybe certainly questionable. You know, I would rather buy if it's a plant, you don't have to worry about it. If it's a mushroom, it's a mushroom. But, you know, if you wanted to do LSD, I would rather get it from a, you know, approved factory or manufacturer rather than, you know, some random person that says, oh yeah, here's my version of LSD. So that's the other problem. You know, if it's decrim or legalized, at least then there's more access for people, and they're not doing what, and whether it's on their own or more access through treatment centers, facilitations, you know, where they can do that and get it, have the coaches and have that assistance available. And one more thing, Jacob, just thinking about it too, is the other problem we have is I think all these licensing bodies are telling therapists, if you do psychedelics, you risk losing your license. Now, that is slowly changing as psychedelics are moving into some level of acceptance. But for now, yeah, these licensing bodies say the same thing. You do that and you're on your own, buddy. No more license.
Is that what it's like in Washington? Because that hasn't happened yet in Minnesota.
Okay. Okay, good.
It's funny, in earlier episodes too, I would always make the argument where, like, therapists like me, they want to get certified in psychedelics, but they just make it so expensive to do. And me personally, I cannot afford to get those certifications because they're thousands and thousands of dollars.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw that in Oregon too, that, you know, the qualifications aren't that great, but the money they're getting is definitely high. So Oregon's making out that way. But yeah, that's the other factor in this whole equation too, is how do we lower the prices, both so that facilitators can do it and add that to their toolbox, so they have multiple modalities, as you've talked about. But then also, just so it's more affordable to people, you know, ketamine, for example, is the one legal psychedelic that people can get healing for right now. But it's so ridiculously expensive. And, you know, same thing, you know, I would love to go to Peru and do a healing down there, but the cost, you know, the airfare and travel. And so we just need to find a way to make these psychedelics more accessible and affordable, both the training part for the facilitators and healers, but also for the medicine itself.
Well, Michael, I know you have a few things to say about that, because Michael's facility is actually, from what I heard, compared to others, is very reasonably priced.
Yay.
And correct me if I'm wrong, Michael, though, I mean, about anything I say about your facility. So.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to argue with you that we're reasonably priced.
Right.
Yeah, I feel like the work that we do is very intimate with people. We do groups with just a maximum of 4 people. A lot of facilities have 20 people, upwards of 20 people in a ceremony. Again, it's a different experience, but what we focus on really a lot of one-on-one care, trauma-informed care. We work a lot with people with PTSD, with trauma, with addiction, but we also work with people who are ready to step into kind of non-dual awareness and awakenings and spiritual awakenings. So it's not, we don't just focus only on people who have experienced trauma, but the principles of trauma-informed care really mean that we treat and create a space that should someone awaken to a repressed memory or trauma, that the way that we interact and we hold that space means that it's supportive for the healing of that process and eliminates the re-traumatization process. So I'm sorry, Randall, that you had an experience that it sounds like it wasn't held in such a great way. And unfortunately, that, like you say, that is a part of something that in an unregulated industry, and I'm, at the same time, I'm not necessarily
right
saying that things should be regulated. I don't think that that is the answer, because how do you regulate? How do you create this? And most parts of the time, the people regulating things don't use, especially when it comes to psychedelics, are more than likely not going to have that direct experience of what those types of things say. So, you know, we live in Peru, and one of the reasons we live in Peru is that ayahuasca is completely 100% legal. It's part of the national heritage, which means that we're very open, completely open about the work that we do, which enables us to create a level of authenticity with people that creates and supports a trusting environment. And unfortunately, sometimes people don't get all the information that they need and they require before entering into these journeys. And it could be described as, like, say, for instance, you go to somewhere and you think you're going to get something, and you end up with something completely different that you're not expecting.
Yeah.
And that's often what can happen with work with medicine, and ayahuasca in particular, is that we come to these experiences because more than often we want an additional amount of positive experiences in our life that we're not getting on a day-to-day basis. Just like perhaps if you're going to go on a gym, to the gym, or you're gonna go on a different eating regimen because that you feel like that you need to make some changes in your life, that process of going to the gym and changing the diet more than likely is going to be uncomfortable. But we go through that process because we know that there's a benefit at the end of it. But what people sometimes get into in these experiences, especially when we're kind of into unconsciously living our lives, or through no fault of our own, but we're just potentially in an environment experience, like you were saying, Randall, about some people who were coming to the medicine to heal from war, and then find themselves then dealing with sexual abuse. And I can speak from my own experience that I came to heal from addictions, and I, you know, did that, but the process of that was facing sexual abuse, ritual abuse, things that were completely out of my awareness field. And the thing is, it's difficult to get in shape unless you go to the gym. You know, it's I think everyone would love to be in shape, everyone would love to be healthy, and everyone would love to have these things. But at some point along the way, there's no right or wrong with this, but there is a process to go through.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's like, oh, I'd love to see what the view's like from the top of Everest. Okay, you're gonna have to walk there. So it's or, you know, maybe just watch a video, but it's not quite the same unless you have the direct experience, I imagine.
Yeah.
So with these plant medicines, there is also what I would say a trend or glamorization that arises with these types of medicines.
Yes.
And again, not to judge in that, but when we enter into this process, the intention of I'm ready to heal, I'm ready to evolve, I want to do this in a safe way.
Yep.
And I'm also really, I think that the kind of awareness field that when we go into plant medicine experiences, am I ready to become aware of things that I'm not aware about?
Yeah.
Because that's more than likely going to happen. And that can be on the non-dual awareness of the infinite nature of consciousness, right through to the separation of the experience of being a human and beyond. Yeah. And we get different levels of that. So that doesn't mean that you're perhaps going to go in and experience all this the first time around. But in my experience, if you are working with these medicines consistently or to a process, or you're in the right setting that actually supports those deep experiences and awakenings, because it is safe to go to those places, more than likely you'll find experiences that are not comfortable as a part of that process.
Yep.
It's more than likely that if you enter into plant medicine experiences, at some point along the way, if you're sitting there intentionally, then you're going to come into contact with those blocks to love, which can be traumatic experiences that we've experienced. And then we look at that firstly from what we have in this lifetime, but then we also start looking into the things of our multi-lifetime experiences, our karma, our trauma imprints that we bring into this life, the themes that we start to unravel of why we actually came here. And these plant medicines can take us through a process. I was just having a conversation with my friends the other night that when we was looking at the kind of the karma and the coming into the life and the karma and I drank plant medicines the first time in my late 20s. And I realized that, you know, if I didn't do that, I may never have come into awareness of sexual abuse. I may just have lived from the trauma imprint, never healed from addictions, more than likely probably died a young death from overdose or other things like this, or just declining health. And I would have never come into that awareness. So what we're able to do with plant medicines is we kind of, I think most people on planet Earth are right now are like, can we speed this process up? What's going on here? Have we kind of been running around on the same track for long enough? What plant medicines are able to do in a safe, trauma-informed setting is able to catalyze our evolution as a species and our own individual. Now, we had a conversation, something came up about health insurance before. As this kind of image came, I was like, we could talk to the health insurance companies. We could say, if you start backing plant medicines in a safe, trauma-informed setting, you're probably going to be paying out less because the treatment's going to be less. Mm-hmm. It's going to move through quicker. It's actually going to be profitable for you to back these kind of new wave of psychedelic renaissance in the proper setting to actually expedite that process of healing. Because a lot of the processes that we go through, a lot of the healings that we go through, they just scratch the surface and they just keep us running around. But for what we describe as dedicated inner truth seekers, is who we market our work to and who we kind of connect with, dedicated inner truth seekers, for people who are dedicated to find that inner truth in that right setting and environment, like we say, the safety, the empowerment of yourself as an infinite being, because this is another point I've not really talked about, but not giving your sovereignty or giving your power away to these plants. They're here to help us. We don't need saving, because we can start getting into that. We can start going into another trap. And that's just another part of plant medicines, when people, I wouldn't say necessarily become addicted to plant medicines, but they become reliant on those, where really these plant medicines are here to teach us how to heal ourselves. This is at least what we teach in our experience.
Right.
So I think it's an exciting time. I think it's an exciting time. And I just wanted to share all that with you both. So thanks for listening.
Thank you, Michael. I do want to say that, you know, that model of sacred ceremony that you do and others do, whether it's ayahuasca or peyote or psilocybin, you know, there's something about that the Western mentality hasn't quite grasp, because community was also part of that. And I love in your ceremonies that you have the smaller community, because, you know, back then, you know, the indigenous, the whole community was part of the ceremony. So they all knew each other because they lived together. Here, you know, 20 travelers are going down to Peru. They don't know each other. They're strangers and they're forced into this tiny little room. And now they're telling their most inner secrets and throwing up on each other and all, you know, it's like, but with four or five, I can see it. That's a much easier way with some early work to build that community before you do that first ceremony. So there's trust already, because you need to have that trust with each other, with the facilitator, with the medicine. If you don't have that trust, you're not going to, you know, you're not going to get anywhere. And one more thing you mentioned, Michael, that I one of my pet peeves is the term bad trip, which I think is also lingo from the don't just say no and don't do drugs, just, you know, the dare stuff. There are challenging moments probably to many trips, but I think they're challenging for a reason. As Michael said, they're not, you know, they're not these, you know, man-eating bacteria or dragons that are, you know, terrorizing us. It's something that the medicine figure knows that we need to see in order to heal that trauma or to learn something, to move on past that, to unblock that thing. So challenging trips, yes, or challenging experiences, but if we can get rid of that bad trip lingo, I would love to see that gone. Because I think that also scares off a number of people. You know, I don't want that bad trip. It's like,
or a lot of the times it's spoken by people who have taken things like LSD and then go to raves and get scared because of they're around 50 people in the rain or whatever.
Right.
That's where I hear it mostly from.
Yeah. Yeah. That does sort of, that's more of a stupid trip. I think.
Yeah. Right.
That's a separate story.
And I think, just to follow on from that, Randall, you know, our experience and the work with trauma-informed care and the support through those processes is that we prevent re-traumatization because what, you know, using that term bad trip, I think another way to kind of describe that more eloquently or descriptively of when someone has that experience is that we relive traumatic events in our life. They come up, but the outcome doesn't change. So, for instance, we might have an experience of being abused, being raped, or bullied, or whatever it may be, and then we have to face that alone and we don't get a resolution, then we can find ourselves actually just being re-traumatized. So in the work that we do as part of trauma-informed care is that should these difficult experiences arise, when you have someone to hold your hand through that process whilst practicing professional ethics, professional distance, and multidimensional care in the trauma-informed space, and then guiding you through that process to be able to feel those unresolved emotions. Now, when we kind of like look at the work, that there's so much, you know, talking to those out there who potentially are listening and are kind of more inclined into the mental health field. But when you just look at like the somatic experiencing and the somatic work, body work is a lot of the work that I do with my clients in my different healing evolution sessions. But we look at the somatic approach from Peter Levine, and when we can see that there's just great studies, great success in my own healing process when I've gone through and worked with somatic experiencing with other therapists, that releasing of that trauma from the body means that we have a different experience because it's no longer stored in the cells, it's released. And then when we have these psychedelic experiences, it's probably some of these more difficult experiences can sometimes probably be like having 100 somatic experiencing sessions all at once and it just coming out of the body. But most of the time with like somatic experiencing or therapy work, there's a level of, okay, I'm going into that point and I'm meditating into that point and I'm feeling in the feelings of my body. And then if it gets too much, the therapist will just bring you back up and you kind of just ground you or titrate and whatever, and kind of be at that point where it's like, okay, well, I don't want to go there anymore. Can we talk about something else? And we'll return next session. And, you know, perhaps you spent 5 minutes going into those really tough feelings. And that perhaps, and, you know, for many reasons is the best way to approach that for someone. And that might be the best person at that set and setting. But what we find in these psychedelic experiences, when the person is ready to have that experience, when they're in that safe environment, what we can have is a complete detox of the trauma from the body somatically. And we'll often see people with shaking, the body just uncontrollably shaking, the trauma coming out of the body, this deep level of fear and this pain. And then we start getting into this level, especially with ayahuasca, where there's purging or vomiting or physical releasing of these emotions, toxic physical, mental, emotional, spiritual from the body. And even though that that might be on some level quite a scary experience, most of the time, 99% of the time, by the end of their ceremony experience, or at least by the next day, for the most part, that's an integrated experience where even though it was tough, there's also a direct experience of feeling lighter on the other side. So, but if you're in an environment and perhaps saying you're just like, okay, I'm getting into psychedelics, and you go through that type of experience and you don't understand what's happening, you don't understand that that's trauma leaving the body, plus you don't have someone to guide you through that process, you might be even scared that you're going to die or something like that in a situation where perhaps you were very deep in a medicine and you didn't have support around you. Often that's the feeling of feeling like you're going to die as a child or something like that has come up. But when we just see that as that experience and we're not able to understand that, then it can be very terrifying. But the level of catalyst that we can achieve in this point, it's unprecedented in the way that psychedelics can go in and somatically release that. So if we just want to look at one, if we want to look at one argument for the benefit of psychedelics, is that somatic experiencing and somatic therapy is renowned worldwide. Loads of people are practicing it. More and more people are practicing it because it's probably one of the most effective ways to heal trauma, amongst many others. In terms of having a somatic experience, psychedelics will take you there without you needing to practice 10 years of meditation to be able to develop a level of presence with yourself. Because if you can't be present with yourself, which is often what happens with trauma survivors, the presence is not able to be cultivated, because being present goes straight into the trauma. And then right. we become unpresent, and then we titrate back and forth, and this can take years. Yeah. Medicine in the right environment, in that safe trauma-informed setting, can take you right to the root cause, of that trauma, not like the what we're talking about, SSRIs and other antidepressants and things like this, which mask that, which again, that might be the best thing for someone, because we don't want people just to be running around traumatized and not have support. That might be a great strategy, a coping mechanism to help get to that root cause. But on its own, it's not going to change things.
Right.
Not long term. But plant medicines at the root cause can transform lives. Transform to the point where life can become enjoyable for those people who didn't even think that that was a possibility.
Yep.
I never ever thought that I would make it to 30 years old. I thought I would have probably killed myself or would have died from a drug overdose. And I never had any hope really for anything, which is one of the reasons why I took so many drugs, because I didn't really care if I died. And that was me just being at that point.
Yeah.
Didn't understand why I was anxious, why I was depressed, why I was suicidal, why I had uncontrollable rage, why that even when I started to try and become sober, I would get into one day of that and it would be completely overwhelming, because all the trauma, all the fear would arise. What we're able to do is we're able to give people options to be able to live a more fulfilling life. So when we start to demonize these things, these psychedelics, which are actually available to us as a great healing modality, I think we have to question, what's the real motivation behind preventing people from healing? What's the motivation between the pharmaceutical companies that might not potentially have as much profits when people actually get well?
Yeah.
What's the motivation between institutions preventing people from truly waking up to the fact that everything that they need is within inside themselves? It's not good for business. So I'll just leave that there.
That was great, Michael. That was definitely on the soapbox and doing well. I love it.
Thanks.
Randall, I'm really excited to hear about this, but like, what actually motivates you to, again, start your book, again, Triumph Over Trauma?
Yeah, it was, well, I think it's just part of the psychedelic experience where, like I said, it actually, I've written books in the past, but I had never had any thoughts to write a book about psychedelics. You know, I've looked at most and read several of them and like them, but you know, I don't need to do anything to add to the body of literature. But the one thing I always did see that was missing was I wanted more details about the specifics in a journey. You know, I knew, oh yes, you know, you're going to have a certain amount of time after you ingest, and then it's going to be a ramp up period, and you're going to have certain, you know, but I wanted, you know, as many specifics, and I didn't get that in the story. So in this LSD journey, it said, you know, write this book, and the main part of the book is going to be these healing stories. And what I wanted to do also was try to find as many non-white, non-male people as I could, because psychedelics has been traditionally male, white male oriented. And so I'm happy to say about 2/3 of the stories are from women, and maybe about half are BIPOC. So I achieved that goal. And amusingly, I thought I would have way too many psilocybin stories. So I was trying to balance, you know, I wanted, you know, at least half and half women. I wanted as broad a diverse range ethnically and racially as possible. But then there are all these different psychedelics. I want to make sure I covered all of those. And so it became this crazy spreadsheet of trying to figure all this out. And I thought I would have a million psilocybin stories, but I think the one I have the most of is ayahuasca, which I did not expect. But that seems to be the number one. I think psilocybin ended up being the second one. I got one ibogaine story, but it's hard to get those again because a lot fewer people do those. But it's a great mix. It's a mix from a military veteran who went through some really serious healing to the wife of a Navy SEAL who was so out of love for herself and her family, and was in this typical trap of her doctor giving her more Xanax and more Xanax, upping the prescription. She, of course, was adding to that mix by alcohol and got to a breaking point and didn't believe in psychedelics. Her husband actually went and got healing through, I don't think it was Heroic Hearts Project, but one of the other vets, I think he got his healing through. And she's like, where's my healing? And then she eventually got it through psilocybin and 5-MeO-DMT combination. But we see it everywhere, all sorts of trauma. There's a beautiful story of this Episcopal minister who went on a psilocybin journey through Johns Hopkins study and spoke in tongues during his journey and got deeper to God, which he didn't even think was possible. Mm-hmm. So all these different stories of transformation, just as Michael was talking about, sometimes it's absolutely amazing healing. Sometimes it's minor healing, you know, a smaller trauma. Sometimes it's spiritual, or oftentimes it's spiritual also. There's almost always a spiritual component, especially with the plant medicines, which seem to have a closer connection to with nature. But then there's also transformation, whether it's, you know, there are stories that Silicon Valley's, you know, been microdosing and maybe macrodosing for years and helping their innovation and their creativity. So all sorts of positive outcomes, but trauma is certainly, in my mind, the number one reason for doing this modality, for sure.
Absolutely.
Just one more thing, Jake, since you asked about it. And originally the book was just going to be about macrodosing, but because, again, microdosing has become such a trendy thing, I think because it's safer, at least people perceive it to be safer, but or gentler, both. And it's actually a little more available because there actually are companies that amazingly ship, I'm not sure how they do it, I'm not the legal expert, but they ship microdose capsules to people. So I added a microdosing section, and we have three stories from people that overcame anxiety and OCD from just microdosing.
Mm-hmm. You know, Randall, something that I want to ask you is, most importantly, did you learn anything about yourself through the journey of making this book?
Wow, that's a great question. I think the one thing that psychedelics have done, and it's not necessarily through the book, but I think the whole process has been a journey, like Michael said, that, you know, the journey starts with that as when you first start thinking about psychedelics, and then it never stops because you're still integrating and still figuring things out. But one of the things I learned was that the empathy that I thought was pretty low within me is much higher than I thought, and this notion of holding space for people, which I thought was just sort of a cute term, and I didn't really get until I actually was in a sort of a crisis situation and had to do that for a couple of people, and it's like the medicine said, so no, see, you can hold space, so you can do these things. So it's been, for me, it's been more of a self-awareness. I will say I can almost not read one of these stories, and I've now seen these stories like 10 different times during the writing process and the editing process, but I still, some of them will still just make me break down. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's integration too, just letting that release of, you know, I love what Michael said, the one problem with the ayahuasca center that I went to, his belief was that purging, the only way to purge was through vomiting. And in that ceremony, I actually purged through laughing. And he said, no, that's unacceptable. That's not purging. You have to, if you don't purge in a bucket, you know, then and you didn't have a successful journey. But I think for me, it's like either crying and that release of the tears, that washing, or laughing are probably the two most common ways that I release. I wouldn't say purge, but certainly I release these things from my body that way.
I think that the very description of purging is something releasing from the body.
Thank you.
Many, many different ways that that occurs. Definitely not just vomiting.
Thank you. I knew I loved you, Michael.
So what do you say? Is there going to be a part two or another book in the near future?
I have discovered that LSD is probably my psychedelic because it's given me the most insights and the most kind of wind behind me. I would say this book is most definitely the LSD, the medicine, the LSD with this. I don't foresee a second book. I know there are a million more stories that could come out or maybe there's on one specific medicine, but there are already so many books out there. I don't foresee that. My goal is just education. I want, whether it's this book or a podcast like you're doing or video, if we can get education out there that this is a possible healing modality, you're going to have to do a lot of work. It's not going to be easy. It's not just taking a pill, sitting back in a lazy boy and smiling. But if you're willing to do that, it's something that can be, as Michael said, so dramatically, and so many others, they might not be alive today without that psychedelic intervention and that medicine showing how to heal. And again, it doesn't heal you. It just gives you the tools to show you, yeah, you have all the tools inside you. You are that healing force, but you have all these blockages you need to get rid of to do that. And so if we can, so no book in the future, but, if I could, get on a soapbox, maybe with Michael, because he speaks so well about that as well, and broadcast it on every network, on everything, and just, re-educate people, that would be my goal.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Absolutely. Thanks for all the work you're doing, Randall. I know it mustn't be a simple endeavor to find the time, space, energy, motivation, and everything else that's required to get that project out to the world. So just want to acknowledge and honor that. And thank you for the work that you've done.
Thank you.
Excellent. Well, excellent.
Yeah. I was just gonna say, Michael, I love what you're doing. Like I said, I love this, every way you described it. And I love that it's out in the open so that people can easily research you, find you, and small groups to me makes the most sense because when you have that 20 people in the room, besides all the other problems, you also, have 20 people releasing. And so it becomes quite noisy at times and that can be distracting to your own journey, your own healing process. That's another reason why I like the smaller group. I think it makes it more manageable and more intimate and more available for your healing. Anything else, Jacob?
No, again, I just want to thank both of you gentlemen for being on my show. This has just been another fantastic episode.
Yeah.
But before we head out, would each of you gentlemen like to give out your contact information just so any of my listeners could possibly get a hold of you?
Sure. Actually, don't even have it memorized, but you can easily find me on LinkedIn. I think it's just LinkedIn, and then Randall Hansen is my username, or they can go to randallshansen.com, which is my website, and they can find all my social media contacts through that. But I'm mostly trying to do most of my educational stuff via LinkedIn right now.
Okay. And you, Michael?
Yeah, you can find me and my wife at CasaGalactica.com. That's CasaGalactica.com. I think, Jacob, you could put a link there that the spelling, then you can just find that in the show notes, makes it easier. And yeah, just invite you just to check out our website. You can also sign up to our newsletter. We've got a load of free things that we give away to help with you for healing trauma from the comfort of your home, or the discomfort of your home, we might say, if it was trauma healing. But and then also how to strengthen your intuition. And yeah, for anyone who's interested more, we have a lot more educational content on our website about how ayahuasca and trauma-informed care particularly can be of benefit to you. And also just invite anyone who wants to talk about their own personal process or is interested. We have a free 30-minute consultation for people who are thinking about doing this work with us, which is completely free, no obligation. And we can just talk about your own personal circumstance, because there's often many different things for individuals to consider in this type of inquiry and to the inner self. So yeah, invite you to reach out to us via our website, and yeah, look forward to connecting with you soon. And just want to say thank you to you, Jacob. Thanks to you, Randall. It's been an absolute pleasure being here with you both this evening.
And I also want to mention that I'll put Randall's book information on
thank
Amazon.
Thank you. I totally forgot about the book.
Triumph Over Trauma.
Yes. Thank you.
I again just want to thank Michael and Randall for being awesome and amazing guests on my show. It was truly a pleasure having them on. I just want to thank all of my listeners for your support. And just to inform everyone that the information expressed in this episode was not meant to be taken as therapeutic advice. If you do find yourself struggling with any type of mental health or addiction issues, please seek the care of a medical doctor or a licensed mental health therapist. And if anyone has any further questions for me, you can reach me at my email address, behaviorhealthintegration121@gmail.com. You can also find me on LinkedIn at Jacob Minig, where you will find more educational posts on psychotherapy, trauma, and addiction. And finally, you can follow me on my website, which is behaviorhealthintegration.org. I also want to inform everyone that there is a great new device out there called Calmigo. It's a breathing device meant to control and manage your breathing rates and the depth of your breathing as you inhale and exhale, to again help relieve any type of anxiety and stress-like symptoms. And if you do put the BHI podcast into the promo code, you get $30 off this amazing device. It is a once-in-a-lifetime deal, and you will not be disappointed. All right, everyone, until next time, have a good day. Bye.